Yeah. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Yeah. The judge, jury, prosecutor, and defender. Is your life a courtroom? Is your life a courtroom? I remember my first meeting, my first 12-step meeting was a long time ago. A long time ago. I was probably 16, 17 years old. It was pretty apparent early on that there was something a little off with my drug and alcohol use. It was a little more than just the teenage wasteland. The teenage wasteland was a little more than that. And my good friend, Russell, was like, hey, man, what's up, man? We should go to check out this thing. I believe it was, we were in Bakersfield, California. It was in a trailer. In my mind, my mind's eye. Inside my mind's eye, I saw it. I can remember it, see it vividly. It's a trailer, like on a parking lot, but like a dirt parking lot. Anyway, we go into this trailer for this meeting where there's pretty much just room for the table and chairs. And I remember distinctively this one guy sharing about his mind. And what he said was he wants to put a no vacancy sign on his head, to his mind, a no vacancy sign. Because what addiction seems to do is come in into his, he made the metaphor as his brain or his mind was a studio apartment. An addiction would come in and ransack the place and eat all the food and tear up the furniture and just throw things around and tear it all up. So he's going to put a no vacancy sign. Because that's what addiction kept doing to him, tearing up his mind. I heard that at 16, 17 years old. He was pretty engaging. I thought it was true. But it still didn't stop me. I wasn't done. I was still young. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to feel how I wanted to feel. I wanted to right the wrongs that had happened in my life. I wanted to make things fair and even. And life ain't fair, so I'm going to make it fair by getting high as a flying squirrel. I was going to make it fair by getting high as a flying squirrel. Anyway, my perception, the container, the framework in which I viewed reality was a framework of a dualistic framework, a right and a wrong framework. Things ain't right, I gotta make it wrong, or it ain't wrong, I gotta make it right. Whatever. The framework was a life was a battlefield. Whoa. See that? Life was a battlefield. That's the framework I had in my mind. Life was a battlefield. Life was a courtroom. It was a courtroom. And depending on the day, I was going to play a different character in the courtroom, depending on what day it was. I was either going to be the judge, the honorable Cregan Jenkin, reporting for duty, all rise. Don't you know how important I think I am? Here I'm is the judge. You doing things wrong. You doing things wrong. You doing things wrong. And I'm the judge. And this is my courtroom. Life is a courtroom. Some days, you know where I'm going with this. Come on. You know where I'm going with this. Some days, I'm the victim. Some days, I'm the victim seeking atonement, seeking righteousness, seeking redemptive violence upon those who would attempt to poison me. Yeah, I was the victim. This is happening to me. Life is happening to me, and I don't like it. Play the victim. And then sometimes, oh man, I'm the prosecutor. Or I'm the defendant, right? It's not me. I mean, you know, what we really have here, Your Honor, is, you know, look, his mom left at an early age. She kind of abandoned him. So he's got some abandonment issues. And so that's really why, you know, he has to do cocaine and do all these really foul things because, you know, he's just really misunderstood. And we should really, you know, and then the prosecutor's like, no. You stole that. You broke into that. You threw that rock. You whatever. Depending on the day, I play a different role in that courtroom. That's not where I saw this going, but it's going. So I'm going to take it. I'm going to ride it. There's a poem called The Guest House. Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Oh wait, why don't we do this? Just a little something. A little something for the background. Oh yeah. There we go. The guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty it of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Yeah. See, poetry gets to do things. It gets to not be... It doesn't have to be accurate. That's what I love about art. It doesn't have to be accurate. Actually, the best art is not accurate. Welcoming it all in, I'm gonna tell you this. At this stage, this place that I am in, because of the 12 steps, the fellowship, the brothers and sisters in my life, a beautiful wife, children who love and care for me and reflect to me that I am worthy of love, I'm worthy of the work that it takes to get whole, to become complete. I get this poem now. You know, you ever know somebody who's just been through literal hell on earth? You ever meet someone like that? You been through hell on earth? Maybe you've survived some things that you would never wish on your worst enemy. Maybe you have survived. Then you understand what this poem is getting at. Because you wouldn't be where you are today and who you are today without the pain, without the disappointment, without the failure. But to get through that.
Okay.
So look, you can get through that with a judge. You can get through that in a courtroom lifestyle. Okay. You just got to replace the characters, right? Okay, you put a different judge in place. Well, then that judge says, well, this, and then the different characters play different roles. Okay, but let me tell you, the courtroom is the ego's playground. The courtroom is the false self's storehouse. The courtroom is your flesh's freezer. Yeah. The courtroom is the ego's playground, your false self's storeroom, the flesh's freezer. Richard Rohr says, if you try to change your ego with the help of your ego, you end up with a better disguised ego. Ego, go, 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 go. Mitchell says, your ego is not your amigo. So you can change certain things about your life and certain perspectives you have with your life with just changing the characters in the courtroom. But then you end up with a better disguised ego. Because now you got a self-righteous kind of judge. And a self-righteous victim. And a self-righteous prosecutor. Man, that's a dangerous combination. Justified. You know, one of the gifts of the 12 steps is this concept that justified anger, and especially justified anger, ought be left to other, more spiritual people, because we can't play that game. And I'm so thankful for that statement, that proclamation, the proclamation on my life that you can't be justifiably angry, Christian. What a gift. What a gift, because look, I have been justifiably angry, and it causes as much damage as cocaine. I'm telling the truth. I'm telling my truth, the truth, a truth. Whose truth? Smack the gavel down. Where's the judge? What's the truth? I don't know, man. It's hard to, I'm trying to make a connection here for whoever's at this point, whoever's ever made it this far. Maybe it's just for me. Maybe this point is just for me. But everything belongs. Everything belongs. This guest house poem kind of helps kind of lay this out, put this in perspective for us. To move beyond this courtroom, okay, look it, we in a society based on law. We in a culture that has right and wrong and places high emphasis on right and wrong. We in a culture where you could have a right and a wrong. You could have a right and a wrong. And you could have a right and a wrong too. And everybody right and everybody wrong. Congratulations. So the reason why I'm making the statement on culture is because culture influences our internal world and influences our spiritual world. And you know, you've ever met someone who's a religious person and they just want to reject culture and pretend that they're somehow outside of it or beyond it, or, and that's just denying how culture is affecting them, because culture affects you. It's the reason why you can go to a church camp event over the weekend and have this amazing spiritual experience and come home on Monday or Tuesday and be back to your same old smoking cigarettes in the bathroom with the bad people at school. Because culture trumps ideology. Culture eats ideology. We just got to be aware of that. Just be aware of that. So in this kind of courtroom scenario, you have a witness. A witness. It would be the equivalent of somebody sitting in the crowd, right? I mean, they got no dog in this fight. I mean, they got no say in the matter. They're not in the jury, so they're not going to, like, tell you whether or not guilty or not. You can't handle the truth. But everything has just something. What does life have to teach you? Let's get out of the courtroom. Let's get into a classroom. You know? That's kind of what's happened to me. In life. Don't get me wrong, that can have its own negative effects. But to begin learning, my boy Mitchell used to share this proverb about a man living out on the wild plains of Kentucky. And his horse runs away. And his neighbor says, "Oh, well, that's unfortunate. You've lost your horse." And the guy goes, "Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't." And a couple days later, the horse returns, bringing 7 other wild horses. And the neighbor says, "I can't believe your fortune. Look how fortunate you are. You now have 8 horses when you only had 1. And the guy goes, maybe it is fortunate, maybe it isn't. And then his son is out playing in the yard with the horses, and the horses, one of the horses trample his son, break his legs, rendering him unable to walk. And the neighbor again says, this is unfortunate. This is bad. Your son can no longer walk. And the man says, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. And then there's a war, and there's a draft, and they're looking for young soldiers to come and fight. And the son's unable to go to this war, which is going to be certain death for all those young soldiers. And he can't go because his legs are broken, so he stays home. And then he grows up to be president of the universe. And the neighbor says, well, that's good. You get it, right? Maybe it's good, maybe it isn't. We like to assign, I'm getting at dualism here, right? Dualistic thinking. We like to assign a category to the things, to our thoughts, to our actions, to our past, to our potential future, to other people's and their thoughts and their Facebook posts and their social media statements. We want to assign right or wrong, true or false. Because we like to play that judge. We like to play that courtroom. We like to say that, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. You got two choices. That's it. It's right or wrong. It's good or bad. That's it. This is why I like, I love Jesus' teachings. There's a concept with Jesus' teachings called the third way. Third way thinking, third way nonviolence. Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. both used this as a form of protest. And for instance, for illustration, you've heard like turn the other cheek. That's a very popular term. And so in the culture back in those days, you know, I think I've shared this before, but just slap him on the right or the left. You know, and if you backhand somebody, it's slapping someone like down, like, you know, I'm better than you because I'm backhanding you. And so if you turn your other cheek, you're forcing them to smack you from the open hand, which then in that society, which is was an egalitarian society, they would see that as you're hitting this person who is an equal, and that person wasn't an equal. So you're forcing this person to put their pride on display, sacrifice their pride. The problem with that is you got to get slapped, maybe twice. Which goes back to that pain, right? And the concept of third way opens up the possibility, right? The concept of the incarnation, the concept of the Trinity. For those people who say they follow the ways of Jesus, the concept of non-dual thinking, the concept of a courtroom, the concept of non-dual thinking should be very easy to grasp, or at least entertain, wonder, ponder upon, pontificate with, wrestle with, struggle, live with it a little bit. But instead, culture eats ideology for lunch. And the mystical mystery of the incarnation in the clickbait explosion of Jesus Christ is thrown out the window and substituted for a right and a wrong, theory of judgment and atonement. Sorry, kind of digressed a little bit there. But I think it's important. It's important because this concept of living your life in a courtroom is exhausting, man. Listen to me just for a second. Just listen. I know how heavy it is to hear that judge in your head every freaking day, snapping his gavel, telling you ain't right for that. They ain't right for that. This ain't right. That ain't right. This is wrong. You need to pay a penance. You need to pay atone for these actions. You shouldn't get away with this. They shouldn't get away with this. Hold up. Hold up. Well, hold up. What about grace? What about love? Look, it don't matter how you feel. The sun comes up. It don't matter how you feel. The waves smash, crash against the sand. It don't matter how you feel or what you did. Your heart keeps beating. Your breath keeps breathing. Your blood keeps flowing. Your brain keeps firing off synapses. It doesn't matter. It keeps moving. Grace, love, mercy. Mercy. So how do you let go of that? How do you let go of that judge? The first thing is acknowledge it. Learn to recognize the judge's voice in your head when it's going off. The trick about the judge is that once you kind of like it'll it's not just judging you, right? It wants to judge other people. And look, you're going to be judged by the standard in which you judge other people ultimately, my brothers and sisters. So be careful about this judge. Be careful to follow this judge, because this judge will make you feel empowered. It will make you feel like you're in control. And your interpretation of reality and ancient literature will make you feel like you got control, because the judge is giving you this illusion, this projection. And in reality, you're no more in control than any of us are. And maybe the illusion of control helps you. And if it does help you, then God bless you. I would just encourage you to not stay in that state of mind. Like, let's begin to move past that. But there are some of us where the judge is most critical and most harsh to us and ourselves, more so than it is to others. If you're anything like me, then it's so much easier to forgive another person their wrong than it is to forgive yourself for your wrongs. The judge, being judgmental of yourself over everything else. That's a heavy crown to wear. Heavy is the crown. And man, like, you ever meet somebody who's really like critical and judgmental about everybody and everything? Let me tell you what, visit their head. Visit their brain. It's horrible in there. I know that because that's me. It's been me. It is a sad, dark, and lonely place. Bro, let me tell you. Next time you hear and you see somebody who is just like that, so judgmental and so sure of themselves, just think about that, what's going on in their head. And that weight is heavy to bear. It is. And it weighs you down. And some of us can't take it. And we take the easy way out. Drugs, alcohol, sex, suicide. Because we just can't take that judgment no more. That judgmental brain state. It's heavy. And so just like this poem, The Guest House. Welcome it all. Laughing. Maybe it has something to teach you. Maybe it's cleaning you out for a new delight. Maybe it's cleaning you out for a new delight. I've been through the 12 steps many times, and this last time has been the most fruit producing time. And let me tell you, that was not fun addressing some of these things, writing some of these things down. But when I went to my eighth and ninth step, where I'm at now, something changed with my eighth step. In the past, step eight is when you become willing to make an amends to people you've hurt in the past. Okay, and then nine is when you actually do it. And so for the first time, I began to really, truly think about the harms I had done to other people. And I began to see it less as from what my actions were and more so what pain my actions caused. That's some years into working this program that I finally got to a place where I actually experienced a legit level of empathy. And part of that was the process of forgiving and loving myself. And part of forgiving and loving myself was going to a counselor who explained to me this concept of the judge. And once I was told about this judge, I began to listen for the judge's voice. And the exercise he gave me was to replace that judge's voice with the sage voice, with a wise, loving, kind, gentle voice. And for me, I picked my grandfather, my Pepe, right? Just some sort of illustration. So when I heard that judge in the morning, in the middle of the day, snapping his gavel and telling me, what's wrong with you? You know, I picked a voice that I was familiar with. Okay, scripture talks about this too. Renewing your mind. Think of things that are above, right? And so that's what I began to do. And I began to hear my grandfather's voice. And how my grandfather was so loving and gentle in correction. And so kind in correction to me. And coming from a verbally abusive alcoholic household and living with him for a time in my life and receiving that, I was given the example, right? And so that's helped me to start replacing that voice of the judge in my head every day. I found a sage voice, somebody else's voice. So when I heard it, I could identify it. And that's one. It's to begin to identify it. That's the first thing. Then begin to replace it with another thought. And look, it wasn't a logical progression. You know, it opened me up for different things, much like this poem, right? It opened me up. I've had to face a lot of things. I had to have my inner place cleared out. I had to have this mind with the no vacancy sign ransacked, and all the milk and all the cookies and all the meat and all the cushions and everything just tore up from the flow up. But that process of an upheaval, that process of letting go of my perception of reality and letting go of the authority of my perception of reality, the other end of that is that voice of the judge has its place. It has its place. There is a time to say, hey, this is right, this is wrong. This kind of thought process is useful. But not as the author and finisher of your day and fate. So maybe your life has been a courtroom. And maybe we need to go outside and play in the sand today. Maybe your life could afford to be a little more of a playground. Or a bath. Maybe taking a bath. Like I'm a big dude, and so getting in the bath is a thing. And it's not getting in, it's getting out. I just really want to encourage you today to have fun, to enjoy yourself, to look for the opportunities, to listen for that judgmental voice, and to have permission today to shush it up, man. When that judge comes in and begins to tell you that you're wrong, and that all the things that you've done is wrong, and that there needs to be a payment for your wrongs, and you don't deserve happiness, you don't deserve peace of mind, you don't deserve to be loved, you don't deserve to love another, that judge is just playing the role. And that you today have the opportunity and the power, through reaching out to another person, through prayer, through meditation, through understanding, to begin to shut up the judge. To be able to pack your stuff and get out the courtroom. Yeah. This message has been brought to you by the makers of Most High Media. Jesus of Nazareth. Craig and Jenkins.
Trying to make you do something you don't want. Nah. I'm just trying to break us free from this bondage, from all of this drama. It's in my DNA, girl, there's no one to blame. And still you call me everything but my name, including insane, crazy, and high. Don't ask me that question, girl, you know we'll get by. It's as simple as love, babe, we just need to try. Don't worry about them, cause it's just you and I. She simply said no, label me a hoe. What? I said, how you figure? I slammed the front door on my nose.
Why do I do these things I do?
Girl, I gotta get my clothes.
When I'm with you, I never feel alone.
Open the door.
The sun is shining, we can start brand new. Why do I do these things I do?
Do they get it from their mama? Do they get it?
from their dad? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Do they get it from their mama? Do I do?